Commission meeting for Thursday, April 8th already, 2021. And of course, due to the state of emergency because of the pandemic, we are still on a teleconferencing, telephonic meeting mode, and still welcome written and public comments via phone or in writing, and we will manage those accordingly. But with that, let's go ahead and have Trish, our clerk, call the roll to get us started.
Thank you, Chair Evans. City of Cathedral City?
Rita Lamb, Councilwoman.
Coachella? Desert Hot Springs?
Present.
Indian Wells?
Present.
Indio? La Quinta?
Present.
Palm Desert?
Mayor Kathleen Kelly, here for Palm Desert.
Palm Springs?
Present.
Rancho Mirage?
Present.
Riverside District 1?
Present.
District 2?
Present.
District 3?
Here.
District 4? District 5?
Russ Martin in for Jeff Hewitt.
Coachella Valley Water District. Imperial Irrigation District. Mission Springs Water District.
Randy Duncan sitting in for Nancy Wright.
We have a quorum.
And it looks like, Tricia, there, Steve Hernandez, Mayor Hernandez from Coachella has joined us, and Mayor Elaine Holmes from Indio has joined us as well. And we've got Alex from IID that has popped in since you started roll call.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Got all of those? Great. Yep. Wonderful. Okay, with that, we'll move on to public comment. This is a time to address public comment for matters that are on the agenda. And of course, for reminder for those outside that might be calling in, star six is how you would unmute yourself, and Trisha will give you rights for that. Do we have anybody speaking on agenda items?
We have a hand raised by Randy.
Randy Binder.
Oh,
yes.
Not Randy Duncan.
Ooh, yeah.
Randy, it's Chair Evans. If you'd like to take your 3 minutes, go for it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, CVCC members. I am a board member of the Bighorn Institute, and I'm here to listen to the annual report on the MushCap update and then also the sheep fence update.
Great, thank you.
I have a question. How do you pronounce the Multi-Species Act? How does he pronounce that?
MushCap.
MushCap, okay, thanks.
MushCap is how I've always, but yeah.
There's no vowel, but either way.
Okay, thank you, Randy. And star nine, I'm sorry, it was star nine for me, but nobody's calling it this time, but we may have that later. I think we might have. That's our next meeting. We've got a call in later. Okay, we'll go to item number four, Commission Chair and Director announcements. I want to first say thank you, since we've got, well, Russ is here for Jeff, but he was there as well, and Supervisor Spiegel. We had great turnout from the Board of Supervisors for our CV Link groundbreaking event last week at the Indio and La Quinta borders, and just want to thank you for visualizing what is something that you've been hearing about for many years and how it's coming to fruition across our valley. So just want to extend for those who attended and for our Board of Supervisors who have supported us as well and through RCTC, just a thank you for being there. It was an exciting way to kick off the week between kids going to school and having that as positive news. So I don't know if anybody else, other commissioners, comments, and or director?
Steve Hernandez has his hand up.
Okay, oh, sorry, Steve, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just more of a comment and maybe as an informational. Tom, we know that the Fed is heavy in infrastructure planning and stimulus, et cetera. I wanna make sure that this agency has an opportunity to get some of that money, and I'm not sure if we've already started just kind of making ourselves known more, or you know, and just to see if we can get an update of how we're doing, any federal dollars that may be coming down the pipe.
Yeah, I could comment a little bit on that front, and I'll segue into state dollars as well. On the federal side, we're still trying to figure it out. I think members of Congress are still trying to figure it out, and we certainly have been in contact with Congressman Ruiz's office. I think most of you know, he has allowed 10 community projects. Those are typically in the hundreds of thousands of dollars range, not millions of dollars. But transportation projects could bump up to $1 to $3 million. CVAG will certainly put in a request related to at least signal synchronization, if not some funding for CV Link 2. The dollars have to be related to a federalized project. In other words, a project that's already on a transportation improvement plan. So these aren't your typical paving project or sidewalk project in a city. They typically are bigger projects. There's also the infrastructure funding, and a member can put in a request for a line item related to that. And that's where the big dollars might come, but so there's a lot of uncertainty about what that exactly means. Is that a $10 million project or a $100 million project? And I know some of the cities are gonna put in requests to the congressman for that. To the degree you'd like a support letter from me and CVAG, please let me know if it's on our transportation plan. I think all of you know, we support getting all of our projects approved and funded. And the more outside money, the better, as our scarce local resources are stretched pretty thin right now. So there's a lot going on that and a lot of uncertainty. We do know the requests have to go in really in the next week into the congressman's office. And on the state front, our own Eduardo Garcia has introduced AB 1500. It's a very large bond that includes a little bit of everything. It's a water bond, it's a kind of a parks bond, it's a wildlife protection bond, it's a workforce development bond. And we've been working with the assemblyman on the details of that. There will be funding for conservation and to acquisition of conservation lands. And there certainly will be funding for our favorite lake, the Salton Sea. I think right now there's $30 million set aside for the Salton Sea Authority. With that, Chair, that's the extent of my report.
Great. Any follow-up questions, Steve, for that? No? Other comments from the commissioners at all? Supervisor Perez, welcome.
Thank you. Good morning. The only thing I would add on that front with Assemblyman Eduardo Garcia, it'd be great if maybe he can we can invite him, do a briefing with us, and then potentially, obviously, make sure that we get the job done, give him a little bit of animo, you know, love, motivation, let's push this, and let's get this done, you know, let's get that funding. So maybe a briefing would be helpful. I just want to put that in.
Okay. I'm happy to entertain that for next meeting or sooner if need be. Karen, did you want to say anything? No. Yep. No. Okay. All right. Let's, we'll move on our agenda, and that would be our consent calendar. And we've just got one item, which is item A, the approval of our last meeting, which was March 11th, 2021. Any questions or comments regarding the minutes of that meeting? Otherwise, I'll entertain a motion.
Rancho Mirage moves consent calendar approval.
Thank you. Lots of seconds. Trisha, you could pick one. Sounds like DHS, Palm Desert. You got it. All right. All those in favor, please.
Indio needs to abstain. I was not at the meeting.
Okay.
And Russ Martin needs to abstain too. I was not at the meeting.
As was Karen Spiegel to abstain.
As was Anthony Bianco. I wasn't there either.
So let's say all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
So the elected say aye, with the exception of Elaine and Karen, and any nays. And then obviously we have abstentions from a number of folks. Something just went blank on my screen. Was that my connectivity? Can people hear me?
We can hear you.
Okay. Great. All right. Everybody froze, and my mouth's still moving. So. All right, I'm going to say that motion passes, not unanimously, of course, but Trish, you could listen to that recording and work out those hands that abstain for not being there. It was a good meeting. Discussion and action items in number six. Very excited. I like this 2020 annual report because I always like to hear about the multi-species habitat conservation plan. It looks like Peter will be providing that update for us.
All right, thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, members of the commission. Yeah, I'm very excited to present the 2020 annual Coachella Valley Multiple Species Habitat Conservation Plan report. Next slide, please. So I know that we have some new commissioners on the in the meeting today. So before I get into the 2020 recap, I do want to provide a little bit of background to the, I guess, the mush cap, as apparently we can call it. I'm going to do my best to condense these five giant binders down to just a few slides. But essentially, the Coachella Valley Multiple Species Habitat Conservation Plan is a joint habitat conservation plan as defined by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and a natural community conservation plan as defined by the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. By merging these two disparate conservation plans together, we are able to provide programmatic state and federal incidental take for development projects within the Coachella Valley. The existence of this plan is why individual projects outside of conservation areas don't need to apply for, you know, individual take permits for every project. The plan was adopted and the permits were issued in 2008 and lasts for 75 years. This allows for 30 years of acquisition to meet the total conservation acreage goals of the plan and a full 75 years to allow for funding of the monitoring and management of the plan. Next slide, please. Okay, so I'm going to do a quick run through of just, you know, the numbers behind the CVMSHCP. So next slide. The plan encompasses 1.1 million acres from Banning Pass in the west all the way just past Chia Rico Summit in the east, and contains all of the watersheds that drain into the Coachella Valley. There are 20 state, regional, and local permittees that have land use authority within the Coachella Valley. I do want to point out, though, unlike CVAG, the CVCC does not, the city of Blythe, nor the tribal governments are members of the CVCC, but we do have the various water districts and a few entities from the state of California represented. Next slide, please. So we have 27 plant and animal species covered under our plan. Next slide. 27 natural communities. Next, three essential ecological processes, and 21 priority conservation areas. Next slide, please. So here we can see a graphic representation of the plan boundaries here in the thick black outline. And the 21 conservation areas here represented in this, you know, myriad colors. The conservation areas were chosen to maximize conservation value while avoid those areas that are, you know, very good development value. And so we've settled on this map here. These 21 conservation areas also contain as much of the 27 species and natural communities as we could find. So if you'll advance the slide. We've got our sand dunes and mesquite hummocks from Thousand Palms. Next picture. Our freshwater marshes down in the Coachella Valley Stormwater Channel and Delta. Next slide, please. Here we've got a round-tailed ground squirrel, a flat-tailed horned lizard, a Coachella Valley giant sand treader cricket, a desert pupfish, and Coachella Valley milkvetch. One thing I want to point out, as we've talked about all these species, many of these species contain Coachella Valley or, you know, in some instances, the name of the city in their names to give a sense of how endemic, how localized many of these species occur and why the plan is so important to their conservation. Finally, the plan does contain three ecological processes, kind of represented here by this underpass underneath Interstate I-10 connecting the peninsular mountain ranges to the south to the transverse mountain ranges in the north. And this underpass here is right near the whitewater exit on I-10. Next slide, please. Okay, so getting into some of the 2020 highlights, I'm going to briefly talk about some of the acquisition progress we've made. The conservation that the CVCC undertakes is broken into three distinct categories. We have federal and state, permittee, and complementary. And these types of conservation are largely determined by the funding source for the acquisition itself. Advance the slide, please. So the total goal of for acquisition under the plan is 209,740 acres, with the majority of that acreage being obtained by the local permittees through CVCC. Advance the slide, please. To date, we have acquired 98,369 acres within the conservation areas, which accounts for about 47% of the total conservation goals. Now, I do want to point out that the permittee progress looks a little low compared to where our goals need to be, but this has been an intentional decision on behalf of CVCC to focus our acquisitions on properties that are at high risk of development. Often these properties are a little smaller and a little bit more expensive because they have such a potential for development. But we anticipate as we start closing on many of these that properties farther afield will be both cheaper and will acquire more acreage per purchase. So we expect that this will grow probably a little quicker in the future. Next slide, please. Okay, so in 2020, permittees were responsible for 2,325 acres, and CVCC individually was responsible for 2,075 of those acres. The acquisition cost totaled just north of $1.2 million, and that comes to about $623 an acre, which is not a bad price for land, but we're expecting that to go down, as I mentioned. We see here a picture of one of the properties we acquired in the Desert Tortoise and Linkage, which is the kind of the pink area highlighted on the map. Next slide, please. Here's a property from our Thousand Palms Conservation Area, that purple color right in the middle. Next slide, please. And here we've got a property we acquired in the Upper Mission Creek Big Morongo Canyon area, which is mostly along Highway 62 way in the north, represented by this blue color here. Next slide, please. We also work with our acquisition partner, Coachella Valley Mountains Conservancy, to make sure that the properties we acquire are cleaned up if need be prior to our acquisition. So we have some properties that we acquired in Thousand Palms that were subject to lots of dumping as depicted here. So we worked with CVMC to get those cleaned up. So here's a before in the next slide. Here's an after of that same property. Next slide. Here's a separate dump site. Next slide. And here it is after we got all the debris out of there. So we were responsible for removing about 2.88 tons of debris from the Coachella Valley prior to acquisition of properties, which is a pretty good number. Okay, next slide, please. Okay, so while there, the plan does allow for some development to occur in conservation areas, but to allow for that kind of development, project applicants have to go through a development process with CVCC in conjunction with the wildlife agencies. So in 2020, CVCC authorized 6 new development projects within conservation areas, totaling about 48 acres of disturbance. However, as part of those development projects, we've also required 248 acres of conservation alongside those impacts. So that's pretty exciting. This picture that you have on your screen right now is kind of an example of one of those. We received an application from a wind power company who wants to repower their windmill sites here depicted on the left. They're gonna take down those smaller windmills, replace them with bigger windmills and fewer windmills, more spaced apart. But through that process, they were gonna have some impacts on habitat designated for a few of the covered species. So to offset those impacts, they're going to grant to CVCC a lot of the undeveloped conservation land here right in the middle between the wind turbines on the left and the wind turbines on the right to CVCC. So we're acquiring all that nice open vacant land that's got great habitat for pocket mouse, desert tortoise, and the like. So that's a very exciting development. Next slide, please. Okay, switching gears to some of our land management and biomonitoring activities. In We partnered with our partners at CVMC to clean up and fence many of the properties in the northwestern portion of the planned boundary. Specifically, we've fenced 2 miles in Sky Valley within the Willow Hole Conservation Area. And that brings our total fencing mileage to date to 16.4 miles total. We've also initiated a partnership with Desert Hot Springs law enforcement to patrol properties that we own both in the city boundary and, you know, adjacent to the city boundary and the surrounding areas, just to make sure that our fences are, you know, not being cut, that we're not seeing any increased levels of trespass. And as some of the commissioners may remember, I believe that deal was approved a couple meetings ago. And so we'll start to see results and the finalization of the deal through 2021. Next slide, please. We've also been busy conducting restoration on many of our properties through the use of Proposition 1 restoration grant monies. We've worked with the Urban Conservation Corps, which is a youth corps sponsored by the Southern California Mountains Foundation, to remove tamarisk on a few of our properties. Most notably, we removed the last remaining tamarisk from our properties in Willow Hole, totaling about just under 5 acres this year. And we also removed about 8 acres of tamarisk from the North Shore Ranch property in the Coachella Valley Stormwater Channel and Delta. We've also worked with, regarding that property, we've also initiated a restoration planning project, which we're very excited to see come to fruition in 2021 and beyond. As part of that tamarisk removal, we've also been conducting some studies on the impact to the groundwater table, both before and after the presence of tamarisk. And you can review that report in the 2020 annual report. And just as you're looking at these pictures, the in the bottom picture on the left-hand side, those yellow pylons, that's a groundwater monitoring well. So that's what we're going and checking to assess the status of the groundwater. Next slide, please. Okay, so some of the biomonitoring updates, we were hard at work and our monitoring efforts continue to pace. So we conducted regular monitoring of many of our alien sand species, including fringe-toed lizards, flat-tailed horn lizards, and round-tailed ground squirrel. We've also had regular monitoring for burrowing owl, pocket mouse, and mecca aster. I do want to draw the commission's attention to the picture here on the right of the burrowing owl. You can see right there that the burrowing owl is being harassed by a round-tailed ground squirrel. And this is, you know, noteworthy for a few reasons. One, because you don't often see these kinds of interactions captured on camera. And two, because when the plan was being developed, there was actually some discussion about whether burrowing owls preyed on ground squirrel. And I think we can see here the answer is decidedly they do not. They're a little too big for burrowing owls to eat. We've also continued doing regular bighorn sheep monitoring. Most notably, we've initiated a study in 2020 to look at the recreational impacts, the impacts of recreational use of many of the trails within the planned boundary on bighorn behavior. That's been conducted by our partners at the USGS, and we're looking forward to reviewing their results and presenting those results to the commission later this year. Next slide, please. And finally, our desert tortoise monitoring continues apace. We are continuing to analyze the genetic variance among the disparate populations of our tortoise to see how they are, to get a sense of both their population health and to see how tortoises move across the landscape. We've also obtained a local assistance grant from a California Department of Fish and Wildlife to assess the tortoise population levels within some of our linkages. So that will be pretty exciting. Hopefully they're utilizing those linkages to move through the landscape again. And then finally, one of the other questions we're looking at in that study is the effect of non-native grasses in tortoise habitat. As you may know, non-native grasses are a big fire problem, as represented down here in the lower left. That's a footprint of the Apple Fire that occurred last year and really tore through some of our best tortoise habitat in the area. Next slide, please. So with that, those are some of the highlights from our 2020 report. I'd be happy to, our recommendation is to review and accept the 2020 annual report on the Coachella Valley Multiple Species Habitat Conservation Plan. And with that, I will happily entertain any questions.
Great. Thank you very much, Peter. Yes, I see Kathleen Kelly, Mayor of Palm Desert, has a hand up, please.
Thank you. That was a terrific consolidation of lots of binders, so thank you for that. Speaking of predators, ravens seem to be a pervasive problem. Even in my own backyard, I watch them carting off the young of many species. So my questions are, do they pose a threat to some of our endangered species, and what do we do about it?
So I can say that ravens are certainly, they are a known threat, especially to young desert tortoise. And there's lots of work being done both through the Living Desert actually and with lots of partners in the high desert to assess some of the what the impact is and also methods of controlling raven populations so that they don't prey on desert tortoise as much. I'm not familiar if there are other, if they're preying on other small mammals as much, but a lot of the work being done currently is on educational campaigns. One of the biggest problems for controlling ravens is what we call subsidies, food subsidies. So people leaving trash out or dumpsters uncovered or trash bins uncovered or, you know, trash out of picnic areas. So there's, you may remember from a couple of years ago, there was the Let's Talk Trash campaign from the Living Desert. That was kind of a work, an effort to get people to cover their trash or, you know, similar methods. Or, you know, at least in Joshua Tree National Park and the Santa Rosa Mountains to install locking dumpsters so that, you know, they can't be opened or be left open really. But I would be happy to look into some of the other practices that are going on and whether or not CBCC can play a role in doing anything like that and get back to you.
Thank you. Okay, Mayor Hernandez, I see a hand up.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. Just want to, Peter, great presentation. You mentioned that with respect to the acquisition, we're at 46% of the total acquisition. I would like to see as part of that graph as well, the time period in which we have to actually do the acquisition. If I'm not mistaken, it's a 75-year period to acquire parcels. So it'd be good to kind of compare to see how we're doing year to year. The other note that I wanted to mention is that you did a good job of presenting what we're doing for just maintenance and operations, ongoing operations of the plant. Tom, I always bring this up that we do have a gap in the maintenance budget, and that's primarily due from the tipping fees that we were supposed to be getting out of, I guess, Eagle Mountain. So just wanted to put that out there that you know, that ongoing maintenance operations is something that we have to really think about in terms of where the money's
going to
come from.
It is, and you actually tied a few things together that all tie back to our budget. And just for clarification, the plan originally had us buying all of our permittee required acres within 30 years. And you might remember the discussion about making that happen, losing that revenue, and our mitigation fee was going to go significantly up just at the time that it shouldn't have, because it would have really affected our development industry. And so we worked with the building industry and our wildlife agency partners and changed our acquisition period from 30 to 45 years. And so we probably have another 35 years left to acquire the property. And you are right, Mayor, that it's one thing to buy the property, it's quite another to manage it and monitor it for that entire 75-year period. And to do so, we set up an endowment. And so we are funding that endowment from year to year. And things look pretty solid for us right now. They certainly aren't as good as we had originally envisioned when Eagle Mountain was on the books. But financially, your commission is in a sound position, as the Finance Committee can attest.
Great. Councilmember Griffith, Donna had a
one of my questions was already answered. Great report. How many acres did we acquire in 2020?
CVCC was responsible for 2,075 acres.
Okay, that's great.
But if we look at the total acres, right, because we get to count the conservancy acres, does that 2075, is that just what we approved out of this group?
Yes.
Okay. And do you know the total that contributed to the plan?
Yes, it's in the 2,325 acres.
Great. And then, you know, the slide I always loved when they showed our conservation area is the progression of the bright green acquisition and how each of those acres turns that kind of colored 21 regions into POP. We own it, you know, they're the phases of green. So maybe we can take a look at that next meeting because it shows you really the enormity of area that this group has and others have already covered, and the opportunity of the other areas that we'll be discussing some of that next, actually. Great. Any other questions? I would love to have that at one of our council meetings. We go back into the chambers on April 20th in La Quinta. So I'll work with our city manager to see if you'd like to come out, Peter, and give us a quick update for our residents. Be something good for them to know about. Okay, with that, we'll move on to our second item, which is 6B. And it's the acquisition of 12 parcels from the Riverside County Treasurer and Tax Collector's 2020 tax default list. And Jim, let's see, where are you? Jim is there.
Good morning, Commissioners. Yes, I think as most of the commissioners know, the CVCC is a public agency, gets the right to remove tax defaulted parcels from the public auction list. It's a multi-step process. The first step is the publication by the treasurer, county treasurer, of a preliminary list of the parcels that they think will be available. We got that in December of last year, and staff selected 13 parcels that we were interested in because they're in conservation areas and vacant. We recently got notice from the county that 12 of the 13 remain available. They calculated the purchase price based on the outstanding taxes due, and they sent us a request that if CVCC is interested, CVCC needs to approve a resolution objecting to the sale and then sign a contingent purchase and sale agreement. So that's the action before you today, to approve that resolution. The parcels are in five conservation areas, or sort of in three groups. We could maybe move this slide up. Thank you. Next slide, get the little stars, or those are the three general areas where the parcels are located. And maybe take the next slide, please. Over here, there's a band across three conservation areas: Upper Mission Creek, Long Canyon, and Thousand Palms. And there's four parcels there. The one over to the west is in the city of Desert Hot Springs. It's west of 62. It's almost in the Whitewater River, right by where those electrical conduction poles are. So it's almost out of the city. The other three going toward the east. One is at approximately Mountain View and 18th. The other two are along Dillon Road, one near Thousand Palms Canyon and the other a couple of miles to the east. All of those are sand source and fringe-tailed lizard habitats. These are in conservation areas that, as you all probably know, are traditional priorities for CVCC. Moving to the next slide, going toward the Santa Rosa San Jacinto Mountains or National Monument conservation area, there's four parcels there. These are off of Highway 74 toward the edge of Palm Canyon, sort of past the fire station if you drive up there about 10 or 12 miles. And they're all in that sort of paper subdivision. I believe there's some houses closer to 74, but these are mostly farther back. Those are a priority because they're in the National Monument and it's a bighorn sheep habitat, or potentially bighorn sheep habitat, as the range changes due to climate change. And the next slide, please. Moving all the way east into the Desert Tortoise Linkage Conservation Area, there's four parcels. They're all south of the 10. Two are east of Cottonwood Springs, way out there to the east, and two are west of Cottonwood Springs near Box Canyon Road there. Those are important, as the name of the area suggests, for desert tortoise habitat, also for linkage. It's also significant desert scrub communities that we want to conserve. All of these are either adjacent to or very near conserved parcels, which makes for ease of management. Most of them, particularly out here in the eastern areas, are pretty remote, which also makes it facilitates management and maintenance. The price of all of the total is $51,532 and some change. Obviously, that's well below fair market value. It reflects the amount of taxes due. The county charges approximately a 10% administration fee. So that's, you know, it's still well below market value. There is sufficient funding in the land acquisition fund. So as I've noted before, the commitment to buy these doesn't mean we will be able to buy them, because many, maybe up to half, will be redeemed. So we likely will only be spending a portion of this money. You asked at a prior meeting that I report on the status of previously approved default parcels for purchase. In November of 2020, you have agreed to purchase 22 parcels. None of them have closed yet. We expect some to close this summer. The potential cost of those is $192,000, or just under $193,000. And those are the only parcels that remain outstanding. So with that, the slide is up there with the resolution number 21003, and staff is recommending the approval of that resolution. I'm happy, as always, to take questions.
Thank you very much, Jim. And thank you for the nice segue of showing our green squares in the beginning of your location of those proposed parcels before us. Questions for Jim? And welcome, Supervisor Hewitt. We didn't get a chance to say goodbye to Russ, but we appreciate him covering. No questions? I'll entertain a motion.
I'll make a motion.
Second.
We've got Anthony Bianco from CVWD and Supervisor Perez, District 4, as a second. All those in favor, please say aye and show some fingers.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. Any abstentions? Any no's? Is that Randy, are you a yes or a no? A yes, thumbs up. Okay. Any abstentions? All right. I'm going to say that motion passes unanimously. Excellent. Okay. And for our final item on discussion action section is number C, which is the update on the Peninsular Bighorn Sheep in the multi-species habitat area. And that's Katie providing that update.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair, members of the commission. I just want to briefly let you know that we have a really wonderful presentation this morning, from Erin Schaefer. Erin is a wildlife biologist with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. She's relatively new to our area. She's been with the department for about a year and a half. And we asked, after the request from the commission last month, we asked Erin to come and give you an update on what's going on with our bighorn sheep. And she's one of the experts on this subject. She's out in the field tracking the sheep, as well as managing many of the population activities related to that. So Erin's going to give you that presentation, and then I will follow very briefly with an update on the bighorn sheep fence. So, Erin.
Awesome. Great. Thank you. Okay. Great. So, hello, everyone. Nice to meet you all virtually. Like Katie said, my name is Erin Schaefer. I'm an environmental scientist with the California Department of Fish and Wildlife, and I'm based locally here in the Coachella Valley. This morning, I'm just going to kind of walk you through the Department of Fish and Wildlife Peninsular Sheep Monitoring Program. I'm going to start with some of the bighorn sheep history and their recovery plan, and then go into our monitoring methods and efforts, and then discuss some of the current status of the population. Next slide, please. Thank you. So So Peninsular sheep have been protected under California state law since 1971. The population declined from about 1,100 animals in the 1970s to about 400 in 2000. And due to the population decrease across those 20 to 30 years, the population was then listed as endangered in 1998. And then the recovery plan was drafted in the year 2000. And the population declines are caused by a variety of reasons, but some big players were habitat loss and fragmentation, human disturbance, and disease. Next slide, please. Awesome. The recovery plan broke up the Peninsular ranges into 9 recovery regions, which are listed here. These regions span from the San Jacinto Mountains, which are just kind of west of Palm Springs, and then they go south to the US-Mexico border. And recovery regions 1 through 4 occur within the Coachella Valley MSHCP. Next slide, please. For Peninsular sheep to be downlisted to threatened, at least 25 ewes, which are adult female sheep, must be present in each of these regions for 6 consecutive years. And then federal, state, and local governments have to make a variety of land management commitments to protect the sheep and their habitat. So an example of that is maintaining connectivity between all portions of the habitat throughout the range. For Peninsular sheep to be delisted, the same criteria are required, but instead of 6 years, it's 12 years. And then they also have the additional criteria that the range-wide population must average 750 individuals and be considered stable for those same 12 years. Next slide. The federal recovery plan serves as the Department of Fish and Wildlife's Peninsular sheep management plan. We implement this recovery plan by monitoring in each recovery region to determine the population status and trends, abundance distribution, by monitoring lamb recruitment, which is basically how many lambs survive to 1 year of age, and by monitoring adult survival and cause-specific mortality. Next slide, please. We monitor bighorn mainly via 3 different methods, capturing, collaring, ground and aerial monitoring, and through helicopter surveys. Each of these methods help us gather data on the sheep. So through capturing and collaring the bighorn, we can determine and track their genetic diversity. We can look at their body condition and pregnancy status, and also health, and then also determine disease status of these individuals. Through ground and aerial monitoring, we can track their movement, determine habitat use patterns, and adult and lamb survival, and then also investigate cause-specific mortality. And then lastly, helicopter surveys enable us to estimate the population abundance throughout the whole range, and then also track those trends over time. Next slide, please. So we capture the sheep via helicopter net gun, which is essentially shooting a large net out of a helicopter. And that's proven to be the safest way to capture these sheep. They then are safely brought back to a base camp, which you can see in the right upper picture, where the animal is processed. At base camp, we take a variety of measurements and tissue samples, and that's also where they get a collar and ear tags. Once that's completed, the animal's flown back to the original location where it was captured and then released. Because battery life of these collars only lasts for so long, and sheep obviously don't live forever, we do have to regularly collar the bighorn. This past fall, we deployed 67 new GPS collars throughout the Peninsular ranges. I specifically work in recovery regions 1 through 3, so this more northern portion. And in this region, we deployed 35 collars. Next slide, please. So we have multiple types of collars deployed throughout the Peninsular ranges over the years, and because they have a variety of different lifespans, there's a variety of collars that are still currently deployed on sheep. So all the functional colors can be tracked in the field, while all the others have this additional feature where they can send GPS locations to our computers. So the new colors that we deployed this fall collect these GPS points every 4 hours, and we're hoping that the colors will last anywhere from 5 to 7 years. To track and locate the bighorn in the field, each of these collars emits a unique frequency, which is then picked up by an antenna and a receiver, which is the equipment in the slide, which then is tuned to that frequency. So then it gives off, we can hear essentially a beeping sound, which then allows you to hone in on where they're located. An example of data that we gather in the field is group compositional data. So we look at number of like males, females, yearlings, lambs, can see their body condition, look for signs of disease, things like that. Next slide, please. So this map is showing you these upper recovery regions, regions 1 through 3 and the upper portion of 4 and their proximity to the Coachella Valley. Within recovery regions 1 through 3, we have four youth groups, which are shown on this map. Adult females show a high level of filippetry and form these U groups, which are made up of related females. The San Jacinto Mountains and Northern Santa Rosa Mountain U groups, which are the blue and green polygons on this map, they both can be broken down each into two sub U groups. So total, they have 4 sub U groups. And I guess we do that because they do generally use different areas of the regions. They also primarily use different water sources in the summertime. If we move to the La Quinta U group seen in the pink polygon, that U group can also be broken down into 2 sub-U groups, and we characterize those as urban and wild. The wild subgroup doesn't use the urban landscape for water or forage, so they have a fairly large home range, indicating they need to move larger distances to meet all their nutritional and energy needs compared to the quote unquote urban U group, which is often seen on like golf courses or like the Lake Cahuilla Park. So they have a unnaturally small home range for how many individuals are in that group. And that's, you know, likely to them due to them finding so many of their resources concentrated in those urban areas. And then lastly, that Sheep Canyon U group is the yellow polygon, and they are split between recovery regions 3 and 4. And all of these U groups largely use the same home ranges year round. There aren't any like big migrations like that occurs. Next slide, please. Okay. So I just thought this was a kind of a cool animation that I was able to throw together of the collared bighorn movement in the Northern Santa Rosa Mountains, which is our recovery region 2. To further orient you, there's Palm Desert on the right side, and you can see Highway 74 kind of winding up over the mountains there. This is created from the GPS point data that we get from the bighorn tracking collars. Another thing to keep in mind is that we don't know the path that they take between these points. So the connection in this graphic is just interpolated in this animation. So these are all collared ewes. Again, these are the adult female sheep. I liked this animation because it kind of shows the cohesion and the movement of the two groups within this recovery region. like specifically, if you see the kind of the red and orange brown colored individuals, they kind of, I guess, stay up there and they have water sources up in that area. And then, if you look a little bit further down, there's that pink, purple, black colored individuals. And that's the other sub-U group. Another interesting thing in this graphic, it shows you a few of the individuals crossing Highway 74. If you look at the pink, there we go, moving over, and the black and orange as well move over there. And I mean, we know that Bighorn cross Highway 74, but it's still a good thing to document. So it's good that we're actually catching up through the use of these GPS collars. Next slide, please. So as we learn about Bighorn through the use of this collar data, as I mentioned, we're learning about them crossing major roadways as well. As I mentioned, Highway 74 is one of those areas. Another area is Interstate 8 down near the U.S.-Mexico border. These two areas are also where we have the biggest problems with automobile collisions with crossing Bighorn. And we actually just had two hit on Highway 74 just last week. So that was a big bummer. Next slide, please. In some of our more remote southern recovery regions, we use remote camera setup at Guzzlers to better understand the seasonal resource use, health and survival of the sheep, and also interspecies relationships. Next slide, please. We also investigate mortalities of marked individuals and reported mortalities of unmarked bighorn. So we have five general cause of death categories. They are predation. So an example of that would be killed by a mountain lion. Non-predation is often related to disease. Urban related, could be due to a car collision or drowning in someone's pool. And unknown. In 2020, 15 mortalities were investigated, five of which were our collared bighorn. And of those throughout recovery regions 1 through 3, predation was the most common cause of death, followed by non-predation and unknown. The non-predation in this area is most often related to disease, like I mentioned. We have a disease here called Mycoplasma ovi pneumoniae. It's a bacterial infection, very similar to pneumonia, and its prevalence is associated with very low lamb survival. A big issue that we have in Recovery Region 3, which to remind you is our La Quinta U group. So that area kind of starts from Highway 74 and then builds south. A big issue that we have there is urban related deaths. So those car collisions, drowning in the Coachella Canal or people's pools or hot tubs, or even dying from eating poisonous plants. Next slide, please. In addition to monitoring the bighorn, we also conduct helicopter population surveys, and these enable us to estimate population abundance for each recovery region and range-wide. In 2016, the Department of Fish and Wildlife estimated 884 peninsular bighorn range-wide. About 300 of those individuals were in the first four recovery regions. So that again is the area that kind of crosses into that MSHCP realm of space. So this was also the first time that the downlisting criteria of 25 use per recovery region was met. All regions still meet the 25 use per recovery region criteria. So that's really great that the population has maintained that for the last 5 years. And we've also come a long way, you know, essentially doubling the population size from the 400 animals that were estimated in 2000. We plan to conduct helicopter population surveys this year or next, and hopefully the population will continue to meet the recovery criteria moving forward. Next slide, please. And with that, just want to thank you for listening, and thank you to Katie for inviting me to speak today. Happy to take any questions that you might have, or you're welcome to reach out via my email there.
Great. Thank you so much, Erin. Questions for Erin? I love this. This is great progress.
Madam Mayor, I have a question.
Please go ahead.
Aaron, it was an excellent presentation, one of the best I've seen on the Bighorn. Can you tell me what our relationship is with the Bighorn Institute and how they're involved in the tracking of the Bighorn in this area?
Sure. So they, I guess the state takes more of the approach of kind of bigger picture population level. And I believe they focus more on more specific questions regarding their research that they're doing. So they do monitor, and I do connect with them regularly. So yeah, does that answer your question?
Do you meet with them on a regular basis?
We chat on the phone.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you.
We have Supervisor Hewitt has his hand up. Go ahead, Joe.
Yeah, Aaron. I would. Yeah, it was a nice report. It's very interesting the way that we're monitoring those and they're coming back so well. Just a curious question. In your time that you've been involved in, you know, in being a biologist and such, have you ever seen any delisting of any species out this way at all?
Well, I haven't been out here for too long, but I do think it's something that's definitely very possible for the penciler sheep. I mean, they've been doing much better than they have in the past, and they have been maintaining this level of, I guess, of use, which is necessary for that downlisting. So it looks good. So hopefully they will move on that way and can be added to that list, but I'm not sure in regards to other species in this area.
Yeah, and when I look at that, I see that, you know, obviously using helicopters for anything, and those collars don't look cheap. You know, it's neat that we get so much knowledge on their habits and stuff, but at the end of the day, if we get them back to being on their own, we don't have to do all that, then that cuts our costs on it, and we can work on some other things, you know, so. Mm-hmm. But very good presentation, thank you.
Thank you.
Quick question for you, Aaron, on the collars. Is there not a brand that might be a combination of battery and solar, given that we're in the desert, that would last longer? So somewhat of that trauma doesn't need to be had on the sheep for replacing batteries or replacing collars overall?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, actually, we do have lots of solar. The majority of the collars we have out are solar powered. So they... a lot of them, so generally they start with like a combination of the battery power and solar. And that does actually lengthen the life quite a bit. It is surprising to me too, for how much time and effort that people put into projects like this, that the technology for collars hasn't advanced as much as I would have thought. But yeah, the collars that we did put out just recently, they're obviously, you know, the newest models that they have available right now. And without the solar pod that's attached, those collars would only last, I believe, like maybe 2.5-3 years. And so that solar pod, which sits on top of the collar to obviously, you know, be getting sunlight, does lengthen the life maybe up to 5 years. Yeah, but then there's also, you know, other things that happen, like the collars malfunctioning and whatnot. So, yeah.
You know, we see pictures every now and then of these bighorn sheep, these beautiful animals wandering into our neighborhoods, getting off track. How do we get them back on track? I know there's a whole, you know, fencing initiative and whatnot going on, but nonetheless, it's kind of neat. It's heartbreaking to see these animals walking in our streets or our front yards or our backyards and being able to get them back into their native environment. How do we do that?
Mm-hmm. I guess in the moment would be just to kind of probably just try to spook them back, you know, towards the mountain. The issue I think that we have right now is that, you know, there are fences, as you guys are aware, in some areas along the mountain and between the mountain and the community. And then there are those breaks still where the sheep do get out. I actually got a call just this morning regarding sheep that had gotten out down in La Quinta. And they were able to shoo them back into the neighborhood pretty quickly, but it's definitely a concern that I share with you. And I don't know if I have the best answer other than trying to continue to get those fences completed. Because yeah, I mean, it's all of the, I guess, housing and settlement didn't used to be here. And so the sheep just, I mean, they're animals, they're just wandering and they get stuck and confused in our communities. So probably just keeping them out would be my best solution.
Well, that's a good transition to thank Erin for the presentation and then turn it back over to Katie so she can update us on the infamous fence in the La Quinta area.
Mayor Evans, can I make an inquiry real quick?
Oh, yes, please. Go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, just to echo all the comments, and I really appreciate the presentation, just really a testament to the conservation efforts that we're making. Hey, I'm not sure if that information is privileged or not, but that PowerPoint presentation was pretty awesome. Anyway, we can share the electronic copy with the members. Is that okay to kind of share, or is it privileged? I know it's a public meeting, but anything we can do to maybe get a copy of that presentation electronically?
Yeah, I think that's okay. I'll just double check. But otherwise, I don't have a problem with it. Like you said, this is a public meeting, so.
Yeah, I'll just defer back to you, Mayor Evans, on the distribution of it, but it's pretty powerful information and a testament to our conservation efforts.
No, I agree. And, you know, when I invite the team to come and talk at our council meeting, clearly the bighorn is a hot topic. There are still obviously some residents, and especially PGA West, that love having them. And then Katie will tell us, some that are saying they're ready to migrate them back to their natural habitat. And so there's definitely a mixed group, but to at least know that we have made efforts on more than doubling them since they were endangered, I think is commendable for a number of agencies at the helm to do this. So
thank you.
Yep. All right. Okay, Katie, it's all yours.
Okay, thanks, Madam Chair. I did want to thank Erin and note that we do have a great partnership, and CVCC actually did provide funding for some of those collars, which helped to leverage the funds that the department provides. Okay, the infamous fence. Just to give you a brief update, we did speak about the fence at the last meeting, and this shows you the route of the fence, and I want to draw your attention to the area which is labeled PGA West, and there's an orange square with a thank you very much, Erica. Essentially, our current status is we have been working now with PGA West as the owner of property that we need to construct the fence. And there's an area just to the west of the PGA West sign that identifies the purple line. The property with purple lines is privately held, and a good portion of that is owned by PGA West. So as reported at the last meeting, we have had some challenges with PGA West in getting an agreement to use that property, primarily resulting from concerns of some of the residents about the visibility and the visual impact of the fence. Since our meeting in March, we actually a few weeks ago put out an example of what the fence would look like. We had our fencing team go out and put up a couple of panels and some posts to show what the actual fencing would look like. And I want to thank the city of La Quinta. We actually borrowed some of the materials left over from Silver Rock, which we will replace. but that I think is going to be a big step for us. We have a meeting now being scheduled with PGA West to go out there with them and take a look. My sense is the fence is difficult to see. And I think with some coloration or paint that would help us to match the posts, it's really the posts that show up at all, we might be able to come up with a solution that would work for everybody. So we do have a meeting in the works with, like I say, both the PGA West management and the Homeowners Association. And hopefully by the next meeting, I'll be able to report on some favorable progress in that effort. Once we actually get approval from PGA West for use of their property, which is essential to complete the route we're focused on, we do still have some time. We'll need to complete final construction plans, but hopefully we could get to that point and have a schedule for actually getting the fence constructed. So that's my brief update, and I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Great. Questions for Katie? Are there any additional public comments on this? I know Randy's listening in, but I don't see anything unless the host does. Good, well, let's continue the updates then. It sounds like they're back, having that visual, because that was some of the concern that we had initially at Silver Rock. And the reality is golfers don't even notice it anymore. It's just kind of there and it blends with the rest of the mountains. And what they notice is the sheep aren't on the course. So I'm glad that you'll be meeting with them again. And I think that they'll have more attention because we just put a hold on any new short-term vacation rental licenses out there, permits out there. So that vote of their CCNRs and HOA and recall and all that stuff is hopefully behind them for a while, and they can concentrate on the fence now.
Chair, Randy yes. Binder has put his hand up to speak, if you wouldn't mind giving him an opportunity. Yes.
Go ahead, Randy.
Thank you for opening it back up. Can you hear me okay?
We can.
Yeah, yes. Okay. Uh-huh.
Thank you for the presentation, and I appreciate the efforts, and the Bighorn Institute stands ready to assist in any way that you need. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, with no other questions, item seven is really information only, and we don't have any further comments on non-agenda items that I've been messaged about. No? Seeing none, we're going to stay on Zoom for our next meeting, and that would be at May 13th at 10:30. We appreciate, again, everybody moving their time to 10:30 so that staff has an opportunity to switch gears between this and our energy and environmental resources, which is coming up at noon. So without further ado, we'll go ahead and adjourn CVCC for today. Thank you very much, everybody. Good work, CVAC staff, CVC staff.
Thanks.
See you all later. Take care.
Thank you.